friends. Welcome to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and my good friend and business partner, Alice Slater, and I were joined on this episode by the absolutely amazing Catherine Heine, whose new short story collection, Games and Rituals, is out now from Fourth Estate. As you will be able to tell, we loved chatting to Catherine Heine, who's an author that I absolutely adore, and we cannot recommend the short story collection enough. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you enjoy.
Hey.
Hi, it's so nice to meet you. Thank you so much.
It's so nice to meet you. My pleasure.
I just want to like kick off by saying I loved Games and Rituals so much.
Oh, thank you.
I just loved it. What an incredible collection. Now, I understand that it's not your first published collection. So I'd love to know, would you say your style has changed since Single Carefree Mellow in 2016?
Oh, 100%. The most notable change is that my stories have plots, which is not something they did in the first collection. And I just think I learned so much writing two novels, which was a totally new experience for me. I just think I'm a lot stronger writer now. I can control the material better. I think like when I was first started, I started my writing life as a poet because poems are short and you don't lose control. But I always really wanted to write fiction. So when I switched over to fiction, but my stories tended to be very short because there was always this problem of them sort of getting out of control and me adding stuff in, but it didn't really move anything forward. And so I think I've learned how to do that a bit better now.
Because you, Alice, you are like you're more of a short story expert than me. But I'm always interested to be in a chat with short story people, especially when Alice is around. But so for you, as someone who writes novels and also writes short stories, what is it that's so magic about short stories for you?
I think it's basically that you can try anything. You can write a short story in the second person. You could, I mean, I guess you could potentially write a novel in the second person, but I think it would begin just sort of grate on the reader at a certain point. But I also think there are things that happen and I want to express them as a short story. And then there are other things that happen to me that I sort of can fit into a novel. And I don't know exactly. My brain decides what's going to be the difference. Within a year, we had our boiler broke down and the house got really cold. So we called the boiler service people and the guy came, but he didn't bring his van or his tools. So he just like looked. And then he said it could be an air bubble or it could not be an air bubble. And I was like, Schrodinger's air bubble. And I was like, really, really happy that I got to make this joke. But then he left and I was really unhappy that the house was still cold. And he came back like six times. I felt like I was married to the boiler man. And I feel like I could write a short story about that, but I'm not sure I could fit it into a novel. But maybe. I mean, when you're writing, whatever you're writing, it seems like the world is sort of helping you and suggesting things. It's a really weird, like mystical thing. I said thing about 20 times in that sentence.
I feel like immediately I just have like 10 different questions that I want to ask at once. I'm just going to go with one at a time. Just going to go old school. But you just mentioned then the boiler man, right? And one thing that I loved about this collection and your work in general is that your stories, like quite a few of them, touch upon these encounters with strangers. So what do you think it is about these like chance encounters that make for good short stories?
Well, I think that it's a complicated answer. I think that I love when funny things happen to me. And actually, at the beginning of the pandemic, when we were in lockdown, I had a great deal of trouble writing. And I think that was, I mean, it was partly because of the world situation, but I think it was also that I wasn't having weird encounters with people. Like shortly before the pandemic, I took a flight somewhere and this elderly man was in the aisle seat and I was in the window seat. And he asked me if I could climb over him. And I did because I thought he had like limited mobility. And then he got up like twice. And I'm like, I just gave this man a lap dance for free. And that made me really happy. And that's the kind of thing, like, even if I don't write about it, it makes me really, really happy that it happened. And I think that one way, certainly, that you remember, that you honor people by holding them in your thoughts is you're like, oh, my mother would have thought this was really funny. I can't wait to tell my best friend. I can't wait to tell my cousin. It becomes this, it's a weird way of sort of honoring people, is that you make something into an anecdote. And then, but sometimes if it's like a big enough thing, it prompts me to write a story.
And I guess it's that element of speculation as well. Like, why did he do that? There could be sinister reasons, there's innocent reasons, but
I know.
That really tickled me.
Well, another time I got on a flight, I flew to Michigan to see my parents, and the man I was sitting next to told me politely that the leg holes of his underpants were too tight. And I was like, this might be the best thing that ever happens to me. It might be all downhill from now. And that made me really happy too. Yeah. We missed a lot during the pandemic of like insane people telling me things. Yeah.
And sometimes stories like that as well, you just think it would be me, wouldn't it? Of course it happens to me. Of course I'm the one that has to climb over this man or hear about this man's underpants.
Like, well, I think some other people would have just been like, no, I'm not going to climb over you. Get out. But instead I'm like, okay.
So as well as encounters with strangers, something that kind of crops up quite a lot in your work, both in the fiction, sorry, in the novel and novel length stuff and short stories, is infidelity, both in the kind of present moment and also as something that has happened in the past. Like, I love it. Why is it so rich and compelling?
Well, I think in general, it's like a huge story mover. And I really don't like to write about the beginnings of relationships. I like to write about relationships either in the middle or in the end. Or I think in this collection, I write a lot about relationships that are over, but the people are left with certain opinions and emotions they're still processing. So, it seems like infidelity is usually the way to like move the story along and have it have some plot. But I think that since I tend to write about the middle of relationships, it's sort of, maybe it's the easiest way to sort of shake things up.
It's very interesting because I'd actually written a future question further down our little list, which was, I love that we enter romantic relationships in the middle rather than beginning. Do you think that is where the good stuff is? Like, I guess you do, you know, I guess if you've already said it, you must think that the middle is where the meat is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think there's one story in the collection, Damascus, where the couple has been divorced for 12 years, but they're still really like emotionally and financially entangled. And that was really, really interesting to me to write. I was like, okay, neither of them has remarried, so something's going on here. And that almost like took over the whole story. I think the beginnings of relationships are really fun and exciting and amazing. I just don't write about them very well.
Feel like you could if you wanted to.
Maybe, I guess.
It's funny though, thinking about the stories that begin with the middle of a relationship. The story 561 was one of my favorites in this collection. And it kind of ties these two ideas together. One of our other questions was just about the way that your stories can feel very complicatedly human without feeling super heavy. even though, of course, 561 does have some really heavy themes in it. Do you ever struggle to find that balance between these like more serious, more kind of emotionally impactful moments with like the humor that you bring to your writing so naturally?
Well, I think that I'm basically very insecure, and I don't think anybody's going to read what I write unless it has a joke in it, like every paragraph. I think I'm always just like, I have to, nobody will keep going. But I think I couldn't write the humor without the darkness, or the other way around. I think those two things are connected for me, and I think they're connected for most writers who write about both. But sort of relating back to what we're saying about, like, are the stories that I write now different? Was like, I did work at Samaritans when I was in my 20s. And I knew I always wanted to write about the regulars. Like, it fascinated me that we had regulars. But I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to make it into a story. And then years and years later, we moved, which is like the most hellish, which I don't understand. You're just moving physical objects. Why is it the worst thing in the world? But it is. And it was really cold. And I was like, oh, I want to write a story about somebody who's moving. And I thought of the thing that everybody says about death, divorce, and relocation being the three big stressors. I wanted to bring that all together. And that sort of gave me the outline of the story.
Which is just fascinating to me, because I felt like what really blew my mind about that story is that those two elements, the present day thread, which is about a woman and her, for our listeners, a woman and her partner helping her partner's ex-wife move house. And then this past tense moment, which talks about how these two women have met previously. Each of those threads alone felt like incredible short stories. And to see them both woven together in one story, just, it blew my mind. I just thought it was incredible.
Well, I think that when you write a story, there has to be the two, at least two threads, and you're braiding them together and you're making it a stronger story. And I think that was something I did not know how to do when I was like in my 20s and 30s. You know, something would funny would happen to me and I'm like, I'm going to write a story about it. And then it would be like two paragraphs where I told the funny story. And then I was like, oh, it's not so great. So it's very, very satisfying as a writer to find those two elements and braid them together. It's very, very nice.
So something I am very interested to know, as someone, I write novels, but I do not write short stories, is how do you know what is a novel and what's a short story? Because as much, you know, you could read that story and think you could surely spin that out into a novel. And likewise, you could read Standard Deviation and think, how did you know to turn that into a novel rather than being a short story about some parents who are anxious about getting their child into an origami club? Like, what? How do you know? What is your intuition or your instinct?
Well, both Standard Deviation and Early Morning Riser started out as short stories. But since my short stories didn't have plots in those days, they were basically character development. And then I was like, well, I want to keep writing about Graham and Audra. I want to keep writing about Jane and Duncan. So with Standard Deviation, like, I just went with it. I didn't outline. I just kept writing. And when I turned it into my editor, she was like, her first notes were, oh, I have some ideas how we can bring the plot forward. And I was like, what plot is that? I'd love to know. And then, but with Early Morning Riser, I did, after I'd written two short stories, I was like, I'm going to plan this out. And it became much more of a novel with like a plot and stuff. So I don't know. There are just certain things that suggest themselves as working as short stories, and other ones that I feel will be more of novels. I'm sorry, that's so inarticulate. I feel like I'm...
I sensed that there would not be a clear-cut answer, but I just want to... Because I was so curious about it, having, you know, read several of your works that I just was like, I want to ask her anyway, even though I know that it's going to be an impossible question to answer, just for my own personal curiosity.
Well, I think that most writers do this, but I definitely do, is I write to process the world around me. It's how I make sense of it. So sometimes I think when something is like a more urgent thing, then I want to get the short story done. So I'm like, I'm just going to write a short story. And other times maybe the topic is like bigger and takes more unpacking. So that suggests itself as a novel.
I think that's a reasonable answer. Yep. Don't worry. It makes sense.
I'd love to know if there was a particular story like that you struggled with to kind of realize that vision.
The story Turn Back. I had this idea. We were living in New York and had this apartment, and I had an idea that this couple would be meeting in the apartment late at night in the kitchen and discussing the man's infidelity, but it would be framed through the fairy tale, the robber bridegroom, where the bride says it was only a dream, and like to the husband, and he gets more and more freaked out. And I thought of that, and 30 years later, I wrote the story. It took me a while to figure out the details. I'm like, okay, like I had that story in mind for so long. Wait, what was the question? Did I even answer?
Yeah, just like, did you struggle? So if it took you 30 years to kind of reckon with the idea, did you struggle to then realize the idea as well? Or was that like stewing time, the process that was necessary to then get a good first draft?
I mean, I didn't even try to write it until like 29 years into the 30 years. I mean, I just had this idea and I always thought of it. And then during the pandemic, I had no fluency at the keyboard. I would get ideas, but then I couldn't write. So I made lots of notes and outlines, and this was one of the stories that I thought about. And I like that story because it's more of like detective work than I usually write. And she's like, she finds this Starbucks receipt and she's trying to like figure out when her husband was there. And actually, when I was writing it, I went into Starbucks and asked them like how much, like what would the receipt would look like and what I could find out and all this stuff. And I told them I was writing a story. But at the end, when I left, the girl was like, "We're so sorry about your husband." And I was like, that made me really, really happy. So, I mean, there were a couple of stories. Pandemic behavior was one of them. And I think Damascus was the other one that I started and I got halfway through and I just was like, I can't finish this. And I put it aside. And that hardly ever happens to me. Either I finish it or I discard it completely. But for me to put it aside and be like, this story I'll figure out later, was kind of a new sensation for me.
Does it take a lot for you to discard a story, or are you quite, do you feel quite stimulated by the world and always finding new stuff that you're like, I could turn that into a short story, this is an idea I've got for a short story, or does it take a lot for you to be like, I guess that one's not going to work?
I don't know. For years and years, I didn't write very much. And, you know, I was very unhappy about not writing. And then when I decided I was a short story writer and not a novelist, then I had more short stories that I knew what to do with. And then I wrote a novel after all. So I feel like because I've written so much now, I'm not very bothered about like not having ideas. But there were ideas certainly in the years where I didn't write very much that I had to abandon because they weren't working. And that's really hard. But I think every author has to do that.
To have like internal kind of quality control to know, to just be able to know when it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I'd love to know as well how often, we kind of talked right at the very beginning of this conversation, we kind of touched upon the experimental nature of the short story and how the form can really lend itself to playing around with form. Do you find sometimes that those experiments fail? Is that where you may sometimes end up discarding an idea, or is that part of the fun?
I think once you figure out the structure of anything, then writing it becomes so much easier. There's a story in the collection called Games and Rituals, which is just written in very short. And I actually wrote that when I was in graduate school, and we found it during the move, this hellish move that I keep talking about. And my husband read it and he liked it. And he was like, I want it to be the title of your new collection. And I was like, well, okay. So I put it in the story when I submitted it to my editor, and she was like, it almost sounds like they're in the 90s. And I was like, they're in the 80s, because that's what I wrote the story. But it seemed so weird to have people like talking about answering machines and stuff that I just updated it to the present day. But I don't think that would work as a novel, but I still really like that short story and the way the narrator thinks.
I mean, I think that's definitely one of my favorite things about short story collections, is coming across those like really exciting examples of experimental form. And there was a lot of that in this collection, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, thank you.
Is there one story in the collection that you kind of secretly think of as like your favorite child, or do you love them all equally?
I think maybe I love them all equally, but I also think that writers don't always know what their best work is. And actually, usually I like the story that I've written most recently the most. So when I turned in the collection, it went from most recent, like that was the order. And my editor was like, we can't do this. We need to chop it up a little bit. But the first story that takes place in the DMV, and I took my son for his road test, and I was really, really nervous, even though he passed and was fine. And they make the parents go sit in this opposite part of the DMV. And I saw that one of the driving examiners was a woman. And it occurred to me, because I like think about true crime all the time, that Ted Bundy had a driver's license, which meant that somebody got in a car with him and drove around and, you know, came back. He did not murder that person. And I think because I was very stressed about my son, that suddenly sort of blew up in my mind as like this perfect short story. And I started making notes on the back of an envelope in my purse. And I knew all the characters. And I think you need that sort of, that bump of something happening, and then the desire to want to work it out. And then it turns into a story.
I'm just very, every time I read any of your short stories or novels, I'm just completely like, the quantity of people that you can imagine and then how real those people seem. I feel like that's a really, I feel like that is an almost uniquely Katherine Heine thing. I don't know how to ask it any other more articulate way than like, how do you do it? How do you have this endless stream of people?
Well, usually the characters come to me as very sort of fully formed. And if I have to change something, then that's very upsetting to me. Like if it turns out they can only have three children with the way the plot is going instead of four, I'm like very upset by that and thrown off for like a couple days. I don't know. They usually sort of come to me as, it's very seldom that I'm like, what should the husband be like? I already know what the husband will be like. Although the one time I did ask my husband about that when I was writing Blue Heron Bridge, I was like, what should the husband be like? And Ian was like, he should be older and British and a mathematician. And I was like, everyone is going to think that's you. And he's like, why? And I said, because you're older and British and a mathematician. And he was like, I don't think people read into it. And I was like, oh, yeah. So, I mean, certain things that people do are inspired by real life. Like an early morning riser, Jane is obsessed with the thrift store and I'm obsessed with the thrift store. So it was easy to give her that quality, but I can't really describe it very well. Although there's this Stephen King quote about writing a novel and how like you get an idea and then you get another idea and then you get a sort of vague outline of the main character and then you get another idea. And I always thought that was the world's least helpful advice. But that's kind of how it works. You just have to be patient and let things come. Although in the DMV story, one of the driving instructors had gets written up for asking a girl that he's giving a road test to if she's on the pill. And that when I was in college, like one of my friends' fathers took us all out for lunch and asked us if we were on the pill. It was like the world's most creepy moment. And I waited a long time to use that in a story. So and then in the bridesmaid story, I wore a bridesmaid's dress to an office temp job when I was in my 20s. And I'm not really like a fan of the aging process, but it does give you more stories to talk about, to use your fiction.
I find that reassuring. So even if I did not know that you had written the foreword for the reissue of Happy All the Time, and even if when I read Standard Deviation, you had not included a Laurie Colwyn quote as the epigraph to Standard Deviation, if I read your work, I'd be like, this really gives me the same vibe as Laurie Colwyn, who is one of my favorite writers, absolutely adore her. I guess in terms of the fact that you both have this skill of spinning these very charming, sparkly, humane, funny stories about mostly like women living in cities. How did she come into your life? And basically, I just want to talk to someone about Laurie Colwyn because hardly anyone I know has read any Laurie Colwyn. And this is my opportunity to ask someone about her.
Well, I read My Mistress, which is a short story of hers. I think I read it in like Best American or something. I didn't read it in as part of a collection. And then my mom read it and like we had so much fun discussing it and how great the character of this mistress is because she's so like un-mistress-like. And it's such a complex, brilliant story. You can like go back to it a million times and reread it and you still find something new. And I feel that way about all of her work. And I think she's very, very deadpan, especially when it comes to like food and dinner parties. And there's the one book where she talks about like, even as she's getting ready for the dinner party, she knows the best moment is going to be when like everybody leaves and goes home.
I think that's A Big Storm Knocked It Over, which is the most recent one that I read. Yeah.
And in her cookbooks, she talks a lot about how like the words you least want to hear from your hostess is like, I've tried a new recipe. Like you don't want that to happen. At one point, my husband and I had to go to like sort of an obscene number of dinner parties. And I basically have like dinner party PTSD from that time of my life. And writing about dinner parties that don't go well is my all-time favorite thing to write about. So I guess I feel like Laurie and I are kindred spirits in that way. But she's like in a league of her own. I don't think you could like set out to write like Laurie Colwyn. It just wouldn't work. You just have to sit back and admire it instead.
Yeah, no, I just find it so sort of refreshing and reassuring. I always come away from reading Laurie Colwyn feeling like reassured about the world somehow. Just love it. And we are having a dinner party tonight, so I'm really hoping that it's not in the Laurie Colwyn stressed out vein. It will be fine. It will be delightful.
If it all goes terribly though, write a novel about it.
It's all material. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all fodder, pal. All fodder for the next book. So aside from Laurie Colwyn, are there any other authors that you find particularly inspirational to your work?
I think it's really hard not to feel inspired by while reading Laurie Moore. Like, she was, you know, when I was in college, she was just sort of rising to fame, and it's she's just so good. And I think everything I am, everything I hope to be, I owe to Anne Tyler. Like, I've read her books so many times. She's so talented. She's so funny. She's so understated, a million things. I love Stephen King. My husband, he was my boyfriend then, when we moved to London, to Tooting, the first time, when I was 29, I read High Fidelity and Bridget Jones's Diary back to back. And I was like, I'm going to love living here. This is the greatest place in the world. And those books had such a profound effect on me, and the kind of writer that I wanted to be. It was kind of realizing this is what I want to do. And Heartburn by Nora Ephron there's no book like it. It's so amazing. Literally every time I mention it, including this time, I go read it again.
And are there any other short story writers?
Oh, let me think. Well, Alice Munro is very hard to beat. Olive Kittredge is just an amazing, amazing book. Elizabeth Strout is so talented. And the first time I read Olive Kittredge, I was just like, oh, maybe I can't do short stories as well as I think I can. She's really raised the bar. She's very, very, very talented.
And a question that we like to ask everyone that we talk to is there something you have read recently that you would like to tell the world about that you found exciting? Doesn't have to be something that is forthcoming. It can be something old that you just read recently, but something that you want to shout about for some reason.
I just read This Story Will Change by Elizabeth Crane. It came out in 22. It's a memoir about sort of the dissolution of her marriage. And it's written in these very funny short chapters. And I basically read it all in one night because I was like, just one more was like slices of cake or something. I don't know. Sips of alcohol, whatever you keep going with. And there was also a book last year called We All Want Impossible Things by Catherine Newman.
Yes.
And it's about like death and hospice, but it's really funny and great. It made me want to enter hospice in a weird way. That book was amazing. Amazing. So I would say those are the two most recent things.
They are great answers. Alice, was there anything in your brain that you were like, I need to ask this or I will surely die?
No, that's it for me. I'm just going to be carrying that airplane story in my heart for the rest of my evening. It's really tickled me.
It was really, really pretty great even when it happened. And I put it on Facebook at the time, and I was like, is there another interpretation of this? And everybody was like, no, there's not. It really made me happy for a super long time. So I'm happy.
Well, we really, really, really appreciate talking to you because we both love the collection and just love your writing and really, really appreciate you, just your time. So thank you so much, Catherine. It's been so nice.
Thank you. Completely.